Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day.
Good morning. It is Thursday morning, the 5th of July. The sun is rising and that tomb is empty. And Logan, in light of Glenna Marshall's interview we just had last hour, this is a great example of the importance of remembering that as we start our days, that however difficult life can be and often is for us, that because that tomb is empty, there's always hope and there's always future in Jesus's beautiful kingdom.
Well, you know, I would say that some days there seems less hope than others.
For sure.
I mean, every day from 6 to 8 a.m., I am suffering here with you. It's a difficult challenge, but I think I'll get through it with God's help.
Oh, but I have noticed in our 16 days together, Logan, just the transformative effect. I mean, there's a Christ-likeness that's beginning to shine about you just from the nature of suffering on the show. Speaking of suffering, too, it's been awfully hot around the country. We've had this heat dome forming in the Midwest, and of course, our listeners in Hartford are really getting hit hard on the East Coast. But I do have good news. Not only is the tomb empty, but it does sound like the heat dome is breaking, and it's supposed to be maybe just 81 degrees tomorrow, 80 on Saturday in Hartford. So we're glad for the break in the heat, right?
You say just 81 like it's a relief, where my dream temperature is 30 degrees always. Permanent 30 and snow. That's why I live where I do.
I love it. Well, welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Capster. That was Logan Rausch on the sound and board. And we're joined in studio right now. He's sitting here. He wandered in this morning, Professor and Dr. Jim Bilby, who is a professor of Christian theology at Bethel University. And last week, Logan, we introduced a segment. We called it Super Sunday School. And the idea was that we are going to address some of the questions of our faith that we don't often talk about. Now, we're not certain about the name Super Sunday School. We're very open to suggestions for this. But again, the idea is we might go beyond Noah and the rainbow, a guy with a sling and a stone, and possibly a wise king, and then the Star of Bethlehem. There's actually more in the biblical text than that, right?
Are you sure? Because I just kept getting spelling tests on all of the prophets' names, and I kept failing. There's more to it than that?
There's going to be much more, Logan.
Well, and that's
good. Jim is going to be here to help us walk through so many of this. And maybe we'll call it Ask Anything, where he's not prepped. He doesn't know for sure what we're going to talk about. And all of this. So looking forward to asking Professor Jim Bilby some of the difficult questions we're often afraid to ask. It's 7 minutes past the hour on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner. We'll be back in just a minute. It is 8 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. And Logan, you know I don't often use the moniker anymore, Dr. Peter Kapsner. I try to when I start feeling a bit insecure because maybe you're smarter and have more hair than me. I ask you to sort of say Dr. Peter Kapsner. But I used to love on the mornings watching Bill wrinkle his nose when he had to say it, because I was also the guy that once pressure washed my foot to try to get the dirt off of it. And as you can imagine, that didn't end terribly well, Logan. But just I'm feeling a little insecure. Can you just say it again this morning?
I can. Well, first, if I've given you the illusion that I'm smarter than you, I'm doing something right. But I would say I'm very excited for this next segment. Dr. Peter Kapsner.
Thank you. Well, that transitions us over to Dr. Jim Bilby, who is a professor of Christian theology at Bethel University. And we're real excited to have you in studio this morning, Jim. Good morning.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be here.
So you were actually texting me last week around, you and I are having conversations about, you have been with these students. They're 18 to 22 years old, typically. They come from a variety of churches and denominations. It's not just any one denomination represented. And yet you ask them in your class a question, just what would you want to talk about? What are some of the difficult questions that they have? And you find a commonality in the questions, regardless of their background.
Yeah, I mean, what's really interesting is that not a single one of them want to talk about whether they should pressure wash their foot.
And I could use a tutorial on that.
Well, I mean, you know, probably maybe something lower than college would be the place to get that.
Thank you. Yeah.
No, in all seriousness, the classes that I teach and probably the classes you teach, there's a million tons of material and you have time for like 2 tons, right? So.
Yeah.
What I've taken to doing is I've taken to polling the students and just asking them, what are you interested in? what would be the subjects that would really, you know, drive you that you would appreciate from this class? I mean, I'll pick two or three or four that I'll hit myself, but then the majority of the time we cover the things that they're interested in. And the fascinating thing is there have been some patterns that have been forming over the last 10 years. The big ones, problem of evil, always at or near the top. So your last segment is obviously certainly relevant to that. Interestingly, at the bottom, creation and theories of creation and how science relates to all that, almost always near the bottom. Now, does it mean there's no students that are interested in it, but the average, you know, I tell them rate it 1 to 5. The average is almost always at the bottom.
Fascinating. And let's go there for just a second, because my understanding of the biblical text, and as we've talked about it, because like you, my students really are not terribly interested in it. But a department chair I had at one point said, I don't even touch the subject in my class because Genesis 1 is not trying to teach us how God created everything from a scientific standpoint. It's trying to just simply teach us that God was at the center of creation, that God is the origin, that God was source bringing all of this forth. Is that how you sort of address this in Christian theology?
Yeah, I mean, so, well, what I really try to do in Christian theology when I'm teaching a theology class, I try to present, here are the range of views.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the reasons why students run from this is that there's a whole bunch of people that think, no, the gospel depends on the first couple chapters of Genesis being a strict historical record, and if somehow they're not, the Bible can't be trusted. All the way to, well, no, the Bible's not really telling us anything at all of details about creation. And I think students just sort of instinctively react negatively to, I don't even know how to approach this, and they sort of set it aside. And interestingly, a lot of subjects that there's a lot of controversy in Scripture, that draws them in, and they're even more interested in that because of the controversy. In this case, I think they say, I'm not sure how this is relevant in any meaningful way to my life, and there's controversy on this, and I don't even know how to navigate it, so I'm not interested in it.
Yeah, fascinating. What other subjects do you find? You mentioned the problem of evil, but what else shows up maybe as sort of top-of-the-list stuff for students that they do want to dig into that may be controversial?
Well, so some of it depends on the class that I teach. So I also teach a Christian social ethics class. And in that class, when you start to deal with, in addition to theological issues, the various social ethical issues that can be raised, top of the list every single time is the issue of homosexuality and how Christians should think about homosexuality and what to think about homosexual behavior, what Scripture say about this, how do we think about this scientifically, how do we think about this socially, how do we think about this politically, is civil marriage an okay thing, et cetera, et cetera. And then recently, and this is literally in the last 2 to 3 years, the question of transgender.
Yeah.
And how do we think about people that are intersex, and is that even a real thing? And all these cascading questions that, you know, again, these are freshmen and sophomores coming in. They just heard rumblings of, I think this is an issue, and ooh, that's scary, because if that changes, then I don't know how to think about this and this and this and this. So as soon as you start broadening the issue to ethical issues, I mean, you have all the typical, you have, you know, war and violence is a really big deal, and how should they think about that as a Christian? Questions of abortion are still really huge, you know, ethically, politically, the whole nine yards. But the questions of sexual ethics broadly, and specifically homosexuality and transgender, are always at the top of the list.
And we'll get into that after the break a little bit, because you have a book coming out not too long from now around transgenderism, if you can
Let's hope, right?
Yeah, let's hope, right? But I'd love to back up in just a second, and I find it so interesting that you've asked these questions over the years, and I have two in my classes, and that these common patterns emerge. And it makes me wonder, what does that say about the strengths of the church and the churches from which all of these young people are coming? And maybe what could we learn as churches about what we're missing that, I don't know about you, but I find my young people are often paralyzed to even keep taking steps in the faith because these questions are so profound, and yet they're hardly ever talked about.
Yeah, and the church, there are churches that do this well, right? So it's really difficult to generalize. You don't want to say, you know, churches aren't really engaging these issues.
Yeah.
Some do. But generally speaking, I think churches are scared to death of these issues, because if they articulate a position, if they take a stand, then it's almost like they're putting something up there that can be shot down, and students will run away from the faith because of that. or if they aggressively say, oh, no, this isn't an important issue. Well, these are obviously important issues. So I think churches are to some degree paralyzed in some of the same ways around these difficult issues. And let's be honest, your average MDiv doesn't prepare you to engage these issues in the depth that's required. And so, you know, poor pastors, they're just trying to survive, get their next sermon out.
Yep.
And this, some of these issues, especially the issue of transgender issues, it's changing daily almost. You can't possibly stay up on the contours of the conversation and still be a pastor doing the job you're supposed to be doing.
I love that you say that just about poor pastors, because, again, you don't want to put the blame in the situation. These are hard issues. And to your point, and having a master's of divinity myself, I don't remember covering a lot of this. We learned how to lead small groups. You sort of learned maybe how to write a sermon and some other important skills as a pastor. But these were not the kind of questions we dealt with. And yet that is, they continue to be the questions that pop up. So can pastors go places? Do they have resources to really think about this stuff? What do you see in that?
Well, increasingly, the internet has a lot of stuff that's out there. The problem is that if I can offer an opinion, about 98% of it is crap.
Mm.
So the problem is that pastors don't have, because they don't have the background already,
right,
to adjudicate, to decide what is the really good stuff that's out there and what is the bad stuff.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, a lot of times when they do their research, when they go out there, they get stuff that isn't as strong, that is isn't remotely biblical, or perhaps just doesn't take into account all the layers of the conversation, social and scientific and mm-hmm. all these sorts of things.
Are you trying to suggest that the first page of Google may not be the most reliable resource for information, that people may even pay to get their stuff on the first point of Google? It's not because it's true it's there. It's because it's been paid for the most?
Well, you could probably go to Google to figure out not to pressure wash your foot. But other issues, probably you want to go a little deeper than that.
Yeah, if I had gotten to the third page, I might have learned that about the pressure washing deal and not taken off the top six layers of my foot and then looked down and thought, what did I just do? 17 minutes past the hour, we'll take a short break. And when we come back, Jim is going to walk us through some conversations around the destiny of the unevangelized, as well as the promised conversation on transgenderism. It's Faith Radio Mornings. We'll be back in just a minute. About 20 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. We're joined in studio by Dr. Jim Bilby, a professor of Christian theology and Christian social ethics at Bethel University. And Logan, you're 22 years old, as we know, and how are you responding to some, when we talk about these questions? Was this some of your experience as well?
All of it. Every single thing that has been said so far has been exactly nail on the head in terms of creation, in terms of the Earth's old Earth, young Earth, whatever it may be. That's why I venture toward flat Earth. It's just easier to figure out. That is a joke. Please don't think I actually believe in a flat Earth.
I love it. But that's like third page of Google too. It's followed by pressure washing your foot as the mm-hmm. flat Earth theory.
Absolutely.
So yeah, you may want to stray away from that one.
If you get past the first page of Google, if what you're looking for isn't on the first page of Google, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I know. So Jim, we talked before the break and you mentioned just that one of the things that's come up specifically in the last 3 years is, or 2 years even, is transgenderism, and that you've been working, I think, for a while on a book, and it's articulating four different views or ways to think about it. And just, you mentioned even in the first segment, the importance of looking at the range of views as one way forward in these difficult conversations.
Yeah, the books that really interested me, I remember a book by the Basingers, David and Randall, Dave Basinger, I believe, on the question of divine foreknowledge and predestination. And
yeah,
obviously that's a college student's, you know, main question. And it just laid out, it had four different contributors authoring four different segments. And I was like, wow, that is so helpful. And I think it's helpful because on these issues, I'm convinced if you only know one issue, you don't even really know that one issue. To truly understand a topic is to understand what you believe, but also understand that there are other views that on that particular topic and how they differ from yours. That's really, really crucial. So I have, with my colleague at Bethel, Paul Eddy, I have edited a number of these multi-view books. And so we did first one on foreknowledge, and we've sort of cycled through. But a couple of years ago, we started talking on this issue of transgender and just how absolutely crucial it is. And And not just that it's a big issue in culture, but it lies behind some of our really fundamental questions that also are really big issues. The question of homosexuality is tied in all sorts of ways with the issue of transgender. Is gender even a stable construct? Is it binary? Did God really create male and female? How do we make sense of people that don't seem to neatly fall into either category then, et cetera, et cetera? So we have been, for the last couple of years, we've been working on a book where we pull together contributions from four different people. And so we have a range, everything from, you know, gender is binary and, you know, traditional gender roles are, you know, are the case to gender's not binary, even if sex is. There's two sexes, but they don't map perfectly onto questions of gender. And, you know, to a view that says, no, there's the gender's not binary. There's at least a kind of a third category, a third gender, and that it's appropriate to transition between, to a view that says literally there is no gender. There's just people, and every single person is on a different point on the gender continuum. And so the point is to have them create a conversation and then respond to each other's views. And so you can see, you know, this is what this view says in response to that view.
Yeah. And I think it's so important because there's so much shouting going on in social media these days, right? You know, tweets in all caps about this is the way you're supposed to think. And so one of the ways it sounds like we can begin to break the paralysis we might feel on these really difficult questions is to simply educate ourselves on the different views and the possibilities and how people are thinking about the conversation. It's not going to automatically resolve everything, but it's a helpful first step, right? And just exploring the different possibilities people have been thinking about.
Right. Knowledge is power. And I think sometimes when we're ignorant of a particular subject, a different view, it's so easy to demonize it and say, well, only liberals or atheists or, you know, people who pressure wash their foot would believe in that particular view. And when we do that, we don't take it seriously. And then we're not interested in engaging that view, that person who has that view in conversation. And we're impoverished when that happens.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Not only is it like mess us up relationally with this other person, we're impoverished. We lose an opportunity not to just change our mind, but we lose an opportunity to broaden our understanding by understanding the different view.
Yeah.
And that's such a danger in the contemporary culture, and the internet makes everything worse.
Yeah, it really does. Well said. We've just got a couple minutes left. I know another really easy question that you've been trying to address is the destiny of the unevangelized. That comes up in every one of my classes. Somebody in the middle of some remote place in the world has never heard the gospel. What happens in this situation? How are you walking this one out?
Well, again, this is one of the topics that came up at the top of the list. This has been number one. And for 10 years, this has been number one, except for one time, Problem of Evil was number one. And actually, interestingly, it's an offshoot of the Problem of Evil, right? So the destiny of the unevangelized question is sometimes called the soteriological problem of evil, or the problem of evil applied to salvation. So if God's all good, and if he's all loving, and if he desires to be in a relationship with all people, what do you do with the people that never ever get an opportunity? It seems like there's a lack of fairness, or that just seems like something that even God wouldn't be okay with. So how do we make sense of that?
Yeah.
And so this is a topic that's, for me personally, I had a faith crisis after college, and these were some of the fundamental questions that I wrestled with. And when I came back to faith, it wasn't like I had all these things figured out. And so as I've been teaching, I mean, the great thing about teaching is, right, you learn way more than even your students,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
This has been an issue that I have continued to want to learn about and want to think about. And so about 3 years ago, I launched into a book on this myself that tries to lay out all the kind of questions and the issues. And I'm trying to lay out a maybe little bit non-standard, I hope not heretical, but view on the issue.
And is this book coming out sometime soon?
This book will be out in year and a bit.
A year and a bit. That's very non-committal of you, Mr. Dolby.
Well, that's because I'm not writing a lot this summer. I just want to be outside too much, and it's really difficult to write when you are outside doing things.
Totally get it. Love having you in studio. Logan, any final comments? Wait, you got a shot here for Professor Bilvey?
Well, I did get a little lesson on this with the evangelism to those who have not heard. And I just, you know, in the last 30 seconds for you to chew on, is I've been given the idea of a specific and general revelation and the general revelation of nature and how people who, even if they can't understand the ins and outs of facets of Christianity, if they've never seen or heard of God, they still know of God because of the creation around them. What do you say to that?
Yeah, you got 30 seconds to sort this out.
Yeah, so there's people who take this in one of two different ways. First is, it's not a problem. They've already had their opportunity. They flunked the test. Done. Right? That's a little harsh.
Yeah.
But there's some people that take it that direction. The other people that say, well, you know what? They can be saved through general revelation alone. They don't really need to know anything about Jesus. And generally speaking, theologically, that gives me a little bit of heartburn. Because anytime you say you don't need to know anything about Jesus, I kind of go, not sure about that, right? So that it's a powerful question, and it's one of those things that adds in and forces us to engage the issue. But it's I'm not sure that the question of general revelation answers it fully either way. We still want to find something else.
Well, darn, I was trying to draw the heresy out of him on the air, but it seems like he had a good answer.
It's great stuff. You just teased us with some of the possibilities in these questions. I certainly hope we get a chance to do this again. I'm sure I know our listeners would love that kind of idea. So thanks for coming in studio this morning and just getting us into some of these difficult questions we don't often talk about.
My pleasure.
It's 28 minutes past the hour. We'll take a break and for news and Breakpoint and come back with Bruce Ashford for the second half of this hour. Boy, it's a great segment with Dr. Jim Bilvey there, and I've sort of left wanting for more, right? And we just break open the box a little bit, and then we quickly close it all back up again. But what important questions to talk about in our faith.
And especially when the headlines are all surrounding these issues, I mean, the transgenderism, the homosexuality, as we get more and more information, we should be talking about it. I mean, I feel like the church was so far behind on homosexuality because everyone was afraid to discuss it. We got to be up talking about this with the kids, with the adults, figuring it out as we go, because we won't know all the answers right away.
Yeah, so it's about 34 minutes past the hour. We'll take a break for news and Impact Audio, and then when we come back, we'll be joined by Captain Bruce Ashford, and we'll talk about populism as well as the Supreme Court justice vacancy. So stay with us on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll be back in just a minute. Jed Medefend is speaking with us this morning about caring for orphans and just the long history we have of doing this kind of goodwill.
This is not just something new. This goes back to the earliest days of the church. In the Roman Empire, Christians were known as a people when Romans would often take unwanted babies outside of a city and leave them there. They called this exposing, and they would just abandon the child to the wind and the rain and the wild animals. And yet Christians, even though it was a small and persecuted church at the time, Christians would go outside the city walls, find these children, bring them in, and often raise them as their own. And that's something we've seen of Christians at their best throughout history. It's always been the case, but we're seeing a real resurgence of this, both in the U.S. and around the world.
Great stuff from Jed Medefend. If you wanted to catch that entire segment about the importance of caring for orphans and the history we've had for that as a church, you can go to myfaithradio.com, search for adoption or orphans, history of orphan care, and you can catch that entire segment. We'll take a short break, and we'll be joined when we come back by Captain Bruce Ashford talking with us about populism and the Supreme Court vacancies.
Remember as a kid, your mom or dad would say, "I told you so." If you're like me, it probably didn't inspire warm fuzzies in your relationship, did it? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. When you made mistakes, you didn't want to hear your mom and dad rub it in. And your kids don't want to feel shame from you when they've made mistakes either. When they've messed up, beware of using comments like, "You should have listened," "I hope you learned your lesson," or "I told you so." You don't have to shame your kids. They already know they made a mistake. Instead, stay quiet. Let the consequences teach the lesson and continue to love your child through the entire situation. Maybe you'll be the one to break the generational saying, "I told you so."
There's more from Mark Gregston on the Parenting Today's Teens website. Go to parentingtodaysteens.org.
I don't know, Captain Ashford. Is this the music you want? Walk up. We're trying new music. You know, we've been talking off air. We got to get a theme song that represents you. And this is, you know, of course, has Welcome to the Jungle. You help us sort of sort through all the issues of the jungle of our culture. Is this what you're looking for, Captain?
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate it. I think this works. As you know, I'm applying to be on the new Space Force, you know, this new branch of the military, and I'd imagine space is a lot like a jungle, and so yeah, that works. Thanks for having me back on the show, Peter.
Oh, of course, Bruce, anytime. We love having you on. We were talking earlier just about this guy that ate 74 hot dogs in 10 minutes on ESPN yesterday, Joey Chestnut, and that was 72 more than I had yesterday, and even those two turned out to be a little dicey. It sounds like you were going the hamburger train yesterday, not the hot dog deal.
Yeah, I did. You know, it reminds me, there was a famous journalist, you know, years ago said, I always wondered what went into a hot dog. Now I know and wish I didn't. He had just done an investigation of hot dogs. Another way of saying, how many hot dogs was it? 72?
74 in 10 minutes.
74. Yeah, another way of putting that is he ate 6.5 pounds of cartilage in that many minutes.
Big
part.
Logan and I are going to head off the air to deal with that. Oh, my gosh. That's a horrible stat, Bruce. How'd you come up with that?
Well, I made it up, as do most public figures. We grilled hamburgers yesterday.
Went
to the pool and then grilled hamburgers for the 4th, and I tried to teach my children about our founding fathers and our nation.
Wow, it's great stuff. And I got to admit, we gave one of our cats some hot dog, and I think after two bites, even she walked away from it knowing what was in that. So it's probably a good move. Well, let's get into some of the topics of the day. Obviously, one of the top-of-the-mind things is next Monday. There's going to be the nominee announced for the Supreme Court vacancy. What are you seeing in some of the news about that? How are you processing what is possible come next Monday?
Yeah, so this is huge. This is an opportunity for conservatives to appoint a Constitution-respecting Supreme Court justice, two of them actually in a two-year span. That's very unusual, highly unusual. And barring some sort of crazy and unforeseen circumstance, whoever President Trump picks, you know, will be confirmed. And, you know, I am grateful to President Trump. I had said before the election I wasn't sure he would keep his promises to conservatives, you know, on court issues, and I was wrong. You know, he has kept his promise on that. So we got a vacancy, and in my mind, I've got four things that Bible-believing Christians should want out of a Supreme Court nomination. Can I?
Yeah, I'd love for you to walk through those. That's great. Your lists are always so helpful to just process some of these things. Let's have it.
Well, I'll try to get them in about a minute apiece, so we don't run long.
Perfect.
So the first is we need somebody who will defend religious liberty. As you know, there is a move in the United States, a strong move to basically reinterpret the Constitution. And instead of giving Christians free exercise of religion, which is a very big and robust thing, instead of that and in its place to give us something like a freedom of private worship, where we can believe what we want to and teach our children what we want to and whisper about it in our homes, but not necessarily act on it in public. We need somebody who will defend religious liberty. Religious liberty is the first freedom, and once it falls, the other freedoms will fall in its wake.
Mm.
So that's number one. Number two, we want a Supreme Court justice who will interpret the law instead of arbitrating morality.
Mm.
All right? And what we mean is we don't want a Muslim lawyer. So in Islam and in Sharia law, a lawyer and a theologian are the same thing.
Yep.
And so the lawyers are doing basically moral philosophers and theologians. In the United States, it's not that way, or ought not to be that way. We want a judge who will interpret the Constitution instead of using the Constitution as a malleable document or a wax nose that can be adjusted according to the judge's moral opinions. Antonin Scalia, the great Supreme Court justice who passed away a couple years ago, gave a speech entitled Mullahs of the West, Judges and Moral Arbiters. And he said, and I agree with him, that the 9 begowned Ivy League lawyers of the Supreme Court have absolutely no business enforcing their moral opinions on the American people.
Mm.
The founding fathers gave us a process for amending the Constitution on important issues, including moral issues. And that process does not involve the Supreme Court. If we want to amend the Constitution, to, for example, redefine marriage, then it has to go through the people, through the legislature, and it has to be an overwhelming majority to amend the Constitution. And what many of our judges have done, many of our justices, is they've bypassed that entire process because they think they know better. That's the second principle.
And if I could just follow up on that quickly, Bruce, is that evangelicals tend to be sort of cheering the idea of Amy Coney Barrett coming on because of her religious convictions. Her Christian religious convictions are so profound. But you're even suggesting that maybe some of the Christian convictions need to stay out of the interpretation of the law.
Yeah, and she's even said that in written papers. Like she said, for example, that her Catholic beliefs on capital punishment should not and will not play a role in her rulings on capital punishment, because you're ruling according to the Constitution, not your own moral opinion. Mm. So, you know, I think the abortion issue is that you had activist judges 40, 50 years ago who decided they thought abortion would be great. Instead of letting the people vote on it through the legislature, they rammed it down our throats by inserting fake rights into the Constitution that never existed. The right to privacy, which basically ended up meaning the right to abortion. But that actually, the question you asked leads us to the third point, which is we need a justice who's willing to reject unconstitutional precedents. One of those unconstitutional precedents is Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade was an example of activist justices on the left who knew that the Constitution did not provide any sort of right to have an abortion, and they sort of inserted that right. They found a way to insert it because they thought it was right. And we need a judge who's willing to overturn unconstitutional precedents. This is a huge debate right now over a Latin – there's a Latin term, stare decisis, in English. I think that's how it would be rendered, which is a rule of thumb that is a general rule. Justices should not overturn previous legal precedent. Well, the left has all of a sudden found, and some people on the right have done this in the past, but right now it's the left, has found deep convictions that nobody should ever overturn previous, you know, case law.
Mm.
Well, because they don't want Roe v. Wade overturned. But that's ridiculous. I mean, what about Plessy Ferguson? What about Dred Scott?
Right.
You know, of course we need to be able to go into previous rulings that were wrong and overturn those rulings. And then my last point is really just a concluding summary, and I just take this from, you know, from Scalia. We don't need mullahs on the Supreme Court. We need justices who rule on the law. And if we want to change the Constitution, especially on moral issues, it needs to go through the people. And that doesn't mean that the American people would always make the right decision, but under our political arrangement, that's how it's supposed to go.
Hmm. Go ahead.
No, I'm fine.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, these four points, do you draw them out anywhere, Bruce? Is there a place that we can access these points? Because it's incredibly helpful to walk through the complexity of this.
Yeah. You know, I made these four points at Fox News Opinion last year about Neil when the Scalia had passed away.
Yeah.
So go to Fox News Opinion and just type in Bruce Ashford and Neil Gorsuch, then that would come up. And I'm planning to write an article for Fox sometime in the next couple of days about the upcoming vacancy.
So great. So it's Bruce Ashford. We'll take a short break. And when we come back, Bruce, we'll have a couple of minutes. I would love for you to just give us some basic definitions of populism, because it is sort of all the rage, not just in America these days, but globally to some extent. So this is Captain Bruce Ashford joining us on Faith Radio Mornings. Be back in just a minute. It's about 8 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we're joined by regular contributor to the show, Dr. and Captain Bruce Ashford, and he is professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, also dean of faculty there. Love having you on, Bruce, to talk about these issues, and unfortunately, we're already getting a little bit short of time, but one of the things I know you're writing about right now has to do with educating us on populism, and populism was obviously one of the forces or currents that got our president elected, but it's also a global thing that's happening. And what you suggest is this isn't just a conservative idea, that populism is very different than either conservative or liberal ideologies.
Yeah, it really is. So populism is a global phenomenon, and it's an American phenomenon right now. It's also a historical phenomenon. We've seen populist movements all throughout history. So let's talk for a minute or two about what it is, and then if we have another minute or two, we can evaluate it.
Perfect.
So here's what it's not. Populism is not merely democratic rule. People who are populist say, this is democracy, this is what it is. No, it's not the same thing. Hmm. It's not merely a reaction to globalization or immigration. You know, on the left, populism in America is usually a reaction to globalization. Think Occupy Wall Street.
Yep.
On the right, it's often partly a reaction to immigration, you know, what's happening right now. But it's not merely that. Neither can it be reduced to right-wing nationalism. Some people would want to say, hey, populism is merely right-wing nationalism. It's not that. Neither is it really a political ideology. Populism is a grassroots movement. In any era, it's a grassroots movement of resentment and mistrust toward elite power brokers who have, at least in their perception, broken their trust and acted in self-interested ways. And in America, it's a combination of blaming the elite, rightly, I think, in part, for the 2008 stock market crash. It's being upset about mass immigration, how that's changed, at least in perception, taking people's jobs away. Being upset about the Iraq War. A lot of Americans felt like they were lied to. And so you have this sort of resentment. And you see it on the left and the right. You saw it with Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. You see it with Trump's presidential campaign. You actually have a number of Sanders voters who have switched over and who are pro-Trump now. And it, there's an economic aspect to it. We see on the left and the right that people want the powerful people in our country to be held accountable for what they do with our stock market and for what they do with money. There's an ethnic and cultural identity factor that people say, listen to us. We are the people. Listen to us, please. We have some concerns about immigration. And then finally, political power that with populism, there's always this question of who should rule. Should it be the masses of people in the moment through social media flash mobbing or expressing their opinion? Should that force the hand of legislators and the president and so forth? Or should it be a slower process? And in America, the Constitution has made this a much slower process. So the Constitution is custom built to contain populism. It can be influenced by populist desires, but it won't be influenced instantaneously and comprehensively. Hmm. So like a populist mob can't immediately force quick change.
And that's and there's such an interesting dynamic in the last election in 2016, because people tended to be voting between Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders at times. And I mean, they couldn't have been more different ideologically, but it really had this underpinning of populism that was going on for both candidates. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think most people know that we would have seen a Sanders-Trump election if the Democratic Party and its elite power brokers hadn't determined that no matter what the Democratic voters want, Hillary will be our candidate.
Yeah.
And they paid for it through the nose. But yeah, so I think in response to our populist moment, and there's positives and negatives to the populism. I mean, there's some things I agree with, really agree with, about where everyday Americans are saying about the economic situation, for example. But there's some negatives too, just part of the toxic political atmosphere we've got. And I would offer, and what have I got, a minute, 2 minutes?
Yeah, you got about a minute left.
Okay, so four ways that we can help make our democracy great again. Number one is to determine to give respect and dignity even to the people we disagree with. They're created in the image and likeness of God. We can disagree with them. We can do it strongly, but we can do it respectfully. We need to do that. Number two, I think we need to work hard to be knowledgeable citizens, not moved mainly by our emotions, not flash mobbing with social media and basically typing in all capitals on our Facebook pages, sort of shouting and screaming at people on our Facebook pages. We just need to be knowledgeable. Third, we need to support politicians and leaders and political pundits and radio hosts who respect the Constitution and democratic politics, that respect our nation's political arrangement and want to work within it. And then finally, and most importantly, Christian virtue. You talk about this all the time on the show. We can't sideline our Christian character when it comes to politics. And I don't know why, but we tend to think we can.
Bruce, great stuff this morning. Thank you. We got to run, but thanks for joining us this morning and talking us through all of this. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.